It is not hard to destroy a college.
Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored by Allen's Tree Service. Now, here's your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, welcome to the second hour of the Garden Hotline. I'll be giving the tip of the trowel shortly, but right now you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 and get in line with your questions, comments, or concerns. Greg's waiting for you, and all you need to do is give him your name and where you're calling from. And thanks for having me on your show. Give a call, and we'll talk about plants, ups and downs, and all arounds. The annuals, how about those pansies and stuff? Ooh, I don't know. Pansies, you know, I like them much better in the spring than I do in the fall. Yeah, it seems like when people get them, they spread them out too much in the fall because they're really not going to grow all that much. So you're probably better off if you do get some pansies and you do like them, pack them tightly so they can create a better impact. Rather than, you know, spacing them out too much, then it just kind of looks like, I don't want to say litter, but litter. Anyway, bulbs, edibles, ground covers, houseplants, lawns, perennials, roses, trees, shrubs, vines, or water gardens. I'll share my thoughts. Always remember my answers, comments, and opinions is certainly not the only garden path to take, but strictly offered as an option to consider. As I said before, Greg is producing today, and during the week, I do landscape consulting, and I do it on the weekends as well. I'm headed over to O'Fallon, Illinois today after the show. And so what that means is I come to your home, and we talk about things that you've noticed that were problematic or what aesthetic or whatever it happens to be. How these are set up, well, you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. The homepage will have my email and phone number. And sometimes it's easier if you just email me. We can kind of go from there. But you can call if you want to. Sometimes the calling goes back and forth and back and forth. And when I come to your home, I will share 40 years plus experience, and we can take a look at what's going on. Tip of the trowel is a special recognition for individual, group, or situation that's made an impression on me, and it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Today's tip of the trowel, actually two different circumstances. Shaw Art Fair, that's the one that's in the Shaw, let's say, now it's Flora Place Park. Wow, so they got fancy smancy signs. But it's basically right across the street from the Botanical Garden. But it's this art fair. Tracy and I love it. It's, you know, it's a little bit different. It's a little bit, you know, I don't want to say quirky, but quirky in a way. But the art fair was great, wonderful. I mean, I can give it a tip of the trowel. But I'll tell you, there was one yard along Flora there that totally caught me by surprise. Now, I forget exactly what these, I think they're rocking horses. They're like horses that, you know, kids use, young kids that are on stands that have springs. This yard had probably 25, if not higher, up a tree trunk. I think it was a sycamore. I can't really remember. They had all these horses attached to the tree trunk with straps and stuff like that. I have never seen anybody do something that wild and crazy. You know, as far as like, there must have been like maybe 25 or so of them up this tree trunk. And so consequently, but that wasn't the thing that really caught my eye. From a distance, I saw these things that kind of looked like a white ball with kind of colorful spikes coming out of it, and they were on some kind of like metal stem or something. I thought, what is this? So as we got closer, I got a better look at it. And what they'd done is taken golf balls, glued colorful golf ball tees onto the golf balls, and then before that, they probably had actually penetrated the golf ball so they could put these metal rods. So their front yard was, it looked like something from outer space. So this was totally caught me completely by surprise. So that's the tip of the trowels for that house and the Shaw Art Fair. Also, the tip of the trowel goes out to the Green Center. The Green Center is in University City on Blackberry Avenue. On November 4th, they're going to have their 10th annual Fall Fire Festival. It is great. They have food. They have beverages. They have food trucks there and everything else. All kinds of. And I mean, they have huge bonfires. It is really an event that goes on and on and on. So that's at the Green Center. You can go online to the Green Center and just check it out. And that's on November 4th. And you can, just do it. Also, the Green Center is where on October 24th at about 6 o'clock, I forget exactly what time, I'll be giving a talk there at the Green Center on Blackberry Avenue in University City on why I like plants better than people. So it's kind of just my sort of nutty personality. So the Green Center, two different things. The Fall Fire Festival, the 10th annual, and also, well, the discounted rate is all the way up until noon, November 4th. So anyway, just go online, find out exactly the date for this, but I think it is on November 4th, but I should know this information more than I'm giving it. People at the Green Center do a great job with all kinds of things. It's a center that's really focused on getting younger kids into the outdoors and really kind of finding out what's going on out there, as opposed to just, let's say, living their life electronically. And that's what is a neat thing about the Green Center. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, if you have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We did have some rain this past week. Thank goodness. It did help a little bit. And I think it's supposed to rain overnight tonight. But still, the ground is not saturated enough. You don't want it saturated, but the ground is still dry. So if you got a chance and you want to go ahead, stick your sprinkler out there, keep your irrigation system, going, that's probably the advisable thing to do. Let's go over to Nashville, Illinois, into Ron's yard. Hi, Ron.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Hi. I have a question about a flower bed I put in the spring. I planted tulips, 18-inch high growing red tulips,
uh-huh,
with some crocus around the front. And I never dug the bulbs up, so I was wondering, people are telling me I should have dug up the bulbs after they're done blooming, and I didn't do that, so I was wondering what's going to happen this coming spring with those, and also, what other kind of flowers do people plant when you have, like, a tulip bed? You know, I'm kind of reaching out to try to find some other kind of plants that would try to give you a season-long flower bed.
Well, I don't know who told you that you need to dig up your bulbs, but that was completely wrong.
I will tell you
that sometimes the tulips don't go, they don't come back, their longevity factor is not all that great. Now, other things that you can, mix in with the tulips and the crocus is, daffodils, if you want to mix that in. If you want, something else beyond that, you can put pansies in for annuals. Are you looking for, something more colorful-wise? I'm assuming this area is in the sun as opposed to the shade.
That's correct, yes.
So then you could,
in the sun.
So then, you could do something like black-eyed Susans or Coreopsis moonbeam, which will give you, summertime color, and then asters for the fall. But no, you don't dig up tulips every year. That would be completely absurd. But what I have found, over the years, because they've been hybridized and everything else to a high extent, they're maybe 2 years out of them, and that's going to be about all you're going to get. Where with daffodil bulbs, you're going to get about, any place between 6 and 8 years. And then they just kind of, I don't want to say poop out, but they poop out.
Okay. All right. So I should at least get 2 years out of these.
Right.
All these tulips.
And then,
okay, great.
And people always say or think that you just stick them in the ground and leave them alone. I fertilize mine, as I have said, and I grow all, majority of mine anymore in pots. But as soon as the foliage starts coming up in the springtime, I use a water-soluble type fertilizer, and I fertilize them like when the leaves are about an inch high, and then I fertilize them every couple weeks while they're growing up until the flowering time.
Okay. All right.
And your crocus.
So do I have to thin the tulip bulbs out, or I just leave them growing the way they are?
Just leave them growing where the way they are. The crocus could give you several years. There's other smaller type bulbs like grape hyacinths, which will, you could mix in with that to give you a little bit more spring color as well. That'll be a bulb form that has crocus and grape hyacinths both have a really long life.
Okay. Well, that's why I was trying to get some longevity to everything. But
right.
Then, you know, I just had, you know, and everybody, some people told me that even the botanical garden replant their bulbs every year.
They do, yes, because they wanted perfection. But that's, you know, that's the same way with me. I don't keep my bulbs. You know, I buy new ones from Operation Brightside every year, and I just put, you know, I put them in. That's just, you know, just my way of doing it. It's kind of like buying annuals. I, you know, that's just my own personal philosophy. I'm not telling everybody to do that by any means.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yep. And but for the fertilizing is really important. And the soil, very well-drained soil, high organic content. Tracy and I have both been to, let's say, the Netherlands, where, you know, the bulbs are historically from. Giant fields of them. It's not in, over the whole country. It's only in certain parts. But it's in where Alsace, no, it's not Alsace-Lorraine. But it's basically an area that's potentially flooded that they dammed off. So it's really well-drained fields. Let's go now to Godfrey, Illinois, and into Ann's yard. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Mike. I have a question. Between my neighbors and myself, we have 3 pecan trees.
Ooh.
And 2 of them are fairly large, and 1 is kind of on the medium size. And for the last 2 years, there's been no meat in the pecans.
Really?
Yes. I just went and picked a bunch off of all 3 trees yesterday and cracked them open, and there's nothing in them.
Basically, to me, that has to say our screwball weather.
Okay.
I don't see anything else that could be causing that.
Okay.
So, I mean, the pecans are, they're not, you know, they're not touchy. I mean, they're, I think they may be native, but I don't think there's anything. If the trees look healthy, if the leaves look healthy, then it's related, because anything that produces a nut, produces a tomato, produces any kind of edible stuff, it really stresses the plant out. And if they're stressed due to the weather, then their ability to do, let's say, good production is not, is going to be somewhat limited.
Okay. All right, because I'm trying to raise some for the Nature Institute this coming year.
Ah.
Last year we tried it, and all the nuts were bad, too. So,
right.
And they are native, so, you know, we can have them around.
Right.
If it's success. But
right.
Boy, the last 2 years have really...
been frustrating.
It is. It's very frustrating. All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. And a good way to tell how good your nuts are, I mean, going out and cracking them open and stuff, find out, you know, just watch and see how many squirrels are headed over there. Because if the squirrels are not getting them, that means there's nothing in there to eat. So let's stay in Illinois and go to Collinsville and into Dora's yard. Hi, Dora.
Hi, Mike. I have a question about, and I might not pronounce this right, Weigla, Wine and Roses. Weiglia?
Yeah, Weigelia.
Oh, that's fancy. Okay, Weigelia. they were put in 14, beginning or the end of 13, and they were small and they weren't trimmed. And then now they're big. There's 2 of them that are really huge. And this year they just had wood and then leaves on the end, but they bloomed. So I knew I couldn't trim them because I'd be trimming off the blooms. When I want to get them down to where they're not so huge,
right,
do I cut them back? And when can I do that?
Basically, you've got about a couple months after they finish flowering to go ahead and prune them.
Okay, now they just finished flowering. The right. One did because of the hot weather. I guess I had blooms on it, so I was afraid to touch them.
Yeah, so you can all the way through the wintertime. Now, no, this variety I'm not totally familiar with. Does historically, it's a summer bloomer, correct?
Correct.
So
correct.
You got all the way from the time that the foliage starts falling off until the new foliage starts coming off the stems, which is going to be probably, you know, April, you know, maybe March, whoever. You got
okay, now
six.
I'm going to need to cut them back. There's some big sticks that got nothing on them.
Yeah, so cut
so
them.
I assume
get
I can cut them all the way down?
Yes, you know, cut those completely all the way down.
And then I think I'm supposed to take a third of the plant only is what I was told by somebody. Just don't cut the part where they bloomed all the way down. Just cut it down a third. So I was just concerned. I didn't know if I could do it yet or if it was too late to do it.
No, you can go ahead and do it.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you for all you do. You've got a lot of information. I'm not a gardener, but I do like these. Now, say it again for me.
Wigelia.
Wigelia. I'm going to write it down. Okay, thank you very much, sir.
Yes, and it looks like Brian Kelly's in here. What's happening?
I heard you talking about nuts and thought that was my cue. No, actually, I wanted to update motorists on westbound 44 at Six Flags Road. It's still, it's either closed. There might be a shoulder open, maybe a lane, but it's really, really backed up. Another emergency vehicle is just getting there. Maybe a tow truck, can't tell. But if you can avoid westbound 44 approaching Six Flags Road, it's a big backup. It's a big mess, and I don't know at this time how long it's going to be there.
That sounds horrible. All the tractor trailers and everything else, it is going to be a nightmare.
So. Exactly.
Don't try to avoid, just avoid.
Just do it.
Right. Thanks, Brian. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Smith looking left. Under pressure, turns back right for the end zone. Caught by Kelsey!
Only one NFL team is 5-0 on the season.
Touchdown! Kansas City!
And this Sunday, the Chiefs try to make it 6-0 as they tackle the Steelers at Arrowhead.
Touchdown!
And you can hear it here on your home for Chiefs football, KMOX.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller, sponsored by Allen's Tree Service on KMOX.
Yes, folks, questions, concerns, comments, 1-800-925-1120 or 314-436-7900. I knew the weather was really changing besides the, you know, the daylight length and all that other stuff. It's getting dark by 7 o'clock. Ah, I hate it. But anyway, beyond that, I noticed the other day I started to hear crows. So the crows usually migrate north when it starts getting warm, and then they come back this direction when it starts getting cold. So I started hearing more and more crows, and also starlings. I started to see more starlings. Like, they always, they're in gangs of like 10 or 15 or 20 or 50 or whatever they happen to be. But anyway, I was looking out the window on the street. There was a whole big bunch of starlings, and I don't know what they were eating off the street, but there wasn't much there on the street to eat. So, you know, they're kind of a nutty bird anyway. And speaking of birds, yeah, on Wednesday I was out working in the yard, and I went into the garage, and a goldfinch got trapped in the garage. So I got him kind of cornered. And I was going to reach and pick him up and just, I'm sure it was a he because of the color. They're not totally bright yet, but getting fairly close. And just as I was going to pick him up and take him out, he said, "I know the way out." And then it. But anyway, if you want to have a great year for, you know, doing the birds as far as bird watching, thistle seed, that's the best thing for finches. Oiled sunflower for cardinals. And, you know, like the doves, they like a mixed type seed. So that's the bird story. Joanne lives in South County. Hi, Joanne.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call. I have zoysia, and I was wondering, how often do you need to fertilize that?
Basically, as soon as it starts greening up, I fertilize that at that point or that time. Then I fertilize every month all the way up until mid to late September.
Oh, till September, huh?
Yeah.
And okay. And do you put that free, whatever it is, down to stop the weeds or whatever they call it?
Well, there's weebie-gons and stuff like that. I do a lot of hand weeding because I like to see what kind of weeds there are. But no, I use like a weebie-gon type thing to get rid of some of the broadleaf weeds. And for like nut sedge, you know, I use a sedge injured, you know, which is another type of herbicide. So I hand dig and I use herbicides both.
Oh, okay. Preen, I think that's what I was thinking
of. Preen, like, yeah, preen should not be used in lawns. Preen is for garden bed space.
Oh, okay.
Why, I'm not exactly sure, but I have not really read the label, but they don't recommend using preen on lawn.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. Oh, I have one other question. Sure. I have this magnolia tree that's about 2 years old now, and I would like to move it. Would I be taking a chance on moving it? That it, like this fall when it gets a little colder?
You could do it now, basically. Just get it moved as soon as you possibly can. Have the area prepared where you're going to move it to. And it's not ideal because you're going to have to cut the existing root system, but just make sure the root ball is, you know, somewhat substantial so you can keep as many roots attached to the tree trunk, to the crown, as possible.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you so much.
Yep. And for anybody with the magnolias and the dogwoods and things like that, check the end of the branches. The flower buds should be formed by now. If you don't have flower buds on the end of your branches, either the plant has had some trouble, whether it's dogwood, magnolia, anything that flowers in the springtime tree-wise, or there is some problems, you pruned wrong time and all that other kind of stuff. So Al lives in Baldwin. Hi, Al.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
I've got a couple of questions for you. First of all, I've got a fern. I'm not sure the variety of it. It sits in a kind of a globe pot that's about 10 inches in diameter at the widest, and that's about 6 inches deep. The whole plant is about 20 inches high. And over the years, it has become root-bound in there. I thought about replanting it many times, but I couldn't get it out of the pot. Now it freed itself by pushing out the side of the pot. So I want to replant it. Can I take any of that root ball off, trim it on the side so I could put it in a little smaller pot to start, or should I leave the root ball intact?
You should probably leave it intact. Water it really well before you do this. I mean, uh-huh. if you want to divide it, you can cut it up into pieces, but just prune the roots back, that's not necessarily a good idea. I mean, some of the roots are going to be damaged just by repotting anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But, there's a certain, let's say, ratio between the amount of roots and the above ground, fern fronds or with any plant with leaves.
Sure.
And you reduce one, it's going to impact the other one. So that's why I say probably, watch out about doing that.
Okay. Then the other thing, I've got a plant that I want to take a cutting off to restart another plant. You put that in water, and is there some, I've heard there's some kind of special stuff you put in the water to accelerate the root growth or enhance the root growth?
Well, what kind of plant is it?
Well, I knew you would ask that. My wife's not here. I didn't think to ask her before I call in. It's not like a fern. It has individual leaves.
Okay, so it's a tropical, it's a house plant type thing.
It's a house plant, yeah. It's not a tropical plant.
In essence, you can do that. Or you can take a cutting and get some rooting hormone at your favorite garden center and do that. If I was going to take cuttings, though, on anything, I would not do it going into wintertime. I would just wait until the days start getting longer again. So wait until after the first of the year.
So you couldn't even put it by, take that cutting and put it in the house by the window?
You could do that. I mean, it may work fine. It's just, it's more advisable to not do it. And, tropical houseplants, whether it's a philodendron, pothos, or whatever it happens to be, mm-hmm. mother-in-law's tongue, there's all kinds of different things. They may be fine, but that's just one factor that may have, an impact on good success. And you could put them in water, just watch the roots, or you could, get some of the rooting hormone, mix it in with the water, or just take the cutting, dip it into the rooting hormone, which is a powder, and then just put it in a potting mixer in a different pot or things like that.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
Yep. And with your fern, too, pulling it out of the existing pot, you're going to reduce some of the root mass. Just make sure, like I said, it's really well watered, and shake it a little bit, and then make sure the pot that you're putting it back into, you're adding some new potting mix to it. So let's go now to Marie in South County. Hi, Marie.
Hi. Thanks for your info. And I was wondering, I had heard that evergreens like coffee grounds, and I didn't know if it's okay to put those on evergreens, or if I should put them in different spots.
Basically, what the coffee grounds do is they offer a little bit of acidity. So certainly you can put them out there. Coffee grounds, unless you drink coffee 24 hours a day, I don't know how many coffee grounds you're actually going to get. But just, dumping a few coffee grounds here, there, and everywhere, I'm assuming on top of mulch and stuff, is probably not going to do all that much good. You could do it. My grandmother always did it, and she always put eggshells around certain things and this and that. Or you can just, if you want to do that, that's great, that's fine. And again, it's to make the soil more acidic, or you can just go and get a product that's specifically made to make the soil acidic.
Okay. And also, I was wondering, with the dry weather, is it good to, I heard that azaleas are shallow rooted. Is it good to, water those lightly every day, or is it better to soak them, an inch a week, or do both when it's real dry? And is it also the same thing with rhododendrons?
Yeah, with both of them, they're surface rooted, but watering a day, once a day doesn't do anything. You're better off to soak the ground, with an inch or so, once a week, especially during the heat of the summertime. That's by far the best thing to do versus, just going out there and sprinkling it a little bit, unless you're going to stay totally consistent. But the thing is, if you can go out there and if you've got mulch and everything else, after you water, where you just stand there for three or five minutes or something, pull the mulch away and then just see how, you know, how damp the soil is in that spot. Usually you're not going to get enough, you know, moisture down into the soil to help the root systems at all. They're surface rooted, but that doesn't mean they're right at the surface. They can go down a couple inches and it still may be dry at that point. That's why you're better off to water for longer extended periods of time, less often.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yep. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
We've got about 9 more minutes here for the Garden Hotline, so 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Then at 10 o'clock, Investing Sense with Adam Bold. 11 o'clock, the KMOX Home Improvement Show with Scott Mosby. And then 1 o'clock, Rick Edelman Show. 3 o'clock, the business of the family business with Ryan Recker. And then at 4 o'clock, the KMOX Auto Show with Greg Damon. So quite the lineup. Let's go to O'Fallon, Missouri, and into Susan's yard. Hi, Susan.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you so much for your service and for your expertise. We're having some landscaping done, and I'm wondering, at this time of year, how many more weeks or perhaps what temperatures do I need to be concerned with? Do I have to still plant things? We're looking at things like phlox, our azaleas, our Montgomery blue spruce. Is this an acceptable time of year to plant?
I would be a little bit concerned. Are we talking about the creeping phlox, the one that's a mat, or are we talking about the perennial one that's tall?
We're talking about creeping.
So I'd be a little bit concerned about the phlox. I'd be a little bit concerned about, you know, the azalea, but I would not be concerned about the blue spruce.
Okay.
I'm not saying you're going to have trouble with it, but it's, you know, those, you know, the azaleas are generally sort of like recommended for, you know, planting in the springtime.
Okay.
And if the creeping phlox, the same thing. I'm surprised it was still available anyplace.
He said he's found them.
All right.
So, well, we should probably wait. But thank you so much.
Yeah, but I mean, there's any kind of woody thing, you know, besides broadleaf evergreen. So no holly, no rhododendrons, no azaleas, nothing like that. But anything that has needles on it, conifers, anything that has deciduous, so in other words, it loses its leaves, there's plenty of time to get that planted until the ground freezes. Let's go now to Frank's yard in St. Louis. Hi, Frank.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. How do you fertilize blackberries and blueberries?
Basically, you want to do it, you know, not going into wintertime, and you can just get an all-purpose, you know, shrub food. You don't need anything very specific for either one of them. But with the blueberries, make sure that you're getting a fertilizer that has iron and sulfur in it, too. So,
okay.
In other words, you want a fertilizer that on the box will say, you know, for acid-loving plants. The blackberries, okay, or blueberries or raspberries, the other ones, I mean, the blueberries need the acidic soil. The raspberries or blackberries don't need an acidic soil.
Blueberries. Don't
yeah.
Do.
Yeah, blueberries need acidic soil, so they need a fertilizer with, you know, sulfur in it, with iron in it, and those kind of things.
Now, what about if you've got a large patch of wild blackberries? How would you fertilize those?
You don't really have to if they're really healthy. The best thing you can do is just maintain them. Go in there, watch them. If you have canes that came up that didn't produce any fruit, but you can just use an all-purpose fertilizer for it if you wanted to do that. But if they're wild and they look healthy and they're growing well, fertilizing is not necessarily going to be to their advantage because you may be forcing growth that's not, you know, that's, like I said, not to the advantage of the overall health of the colony or the sort of the fruit production.
I'm just wanting to get a better berry out of them, a more healthier-looking berry.
Yeah. I wouldn't use triple 12. I don't like that. That's an agricultural product. But to any kind of all-purpose, let's say, fertilizer for, you know, any kind of woody plant, so like a tree and shrub type food.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Good luck with that. And now Oakville, that's where Rich lives. Hi, Rich.
Hey, how you doing?
Very good.
Hey, I buried a dogwood tree in my backyard. It's under a canopy. And when I bought it from the nursery, they told me to leave the burlap a little bit up out of the ground. And I'm concerned about that over the winter. Should I mulch over that, or
I'm surprised, right. You know, I'm surprised they would tell you that, especially with the way the burlap is now. It's not classic burlap. It's usually some kind of high, you know, high-tech fiber. But what that burlap, leaving it up out of the ground, that could wick moisture away from your root system. So usually what you do is you fold the burlap down into the hole, even if it's the kind that don't rot very well or all that other stuff, and not have it sticking up out of the ground. I would go out there and cut it off and then put 2 or 3 inches of mulch, you know, around it, but don't put it up next to the trunk of your dogwood.
Okay. And then, it's actually getting buds on it right now.
Yeah, it should. If it doesn't get buds.
And there's green branches, so right. it looks like it's doing okay. I didn't put it in at the ideal time.
Sure.
So, okay. And then I got one other quick question. I got this lime mount spear. It's a bush. S-P-I-R-E-A.
Right, spirea.
Okay. And I need to transplant them next year, so they're in small buckets.
Uh-huh.
And I just buried the whole bucket in the ground.
That's exactly.
Do they do okay over the winter?
Yeah, just make sure.
So that I can transplant them next year?
Yeah, just make sure there's an inch or so of the top of the pot above the surrounding ground.
Okay.
But, yeah, you're fine with doing it that way, so you did it just right. But, yeah, your dogwoods, anything that's, you know, it should have flower buds on it for next year. So, just, you know, my concern, again, is just wicking the moisture away. I never heard of leaving some of the burlap sticking up out of the ground. So, thanks, Rich.
Well, that's what they told me to do, and my wife's been on me about it. She's like, I don't think that's right. And it was her birthday present, so I got to make sure stays good.
Sure. Thanks, Rich. And now let's go to Steve in St. Charles. Steve, how are you?
Good. I bought some seedling Norway spruce trees from the Department of Conservation this year, and I plant them up in the country, but it's 80 miles away, and it was really dry this year, and I couldn't keep them going because I couldn't water them. In the springtime, I'd like to keep them at the house in some sort of pot or whatever and keep them watered and transplant them in the fall. Is that a good plan, and what do I put them in? How do I handle it?
You could just get regular black plastic nursery pots, 1 gallon pots. You could put a couple in each pot since they're just, you know, more or less saplings, and grow them in a pot. You could even grow them like maybe for a full 2 years or something, where you can control everything to get an adequate root system established, then take them up and, you know, install them in the new location 80 miles away or whatever.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, and with you, again, use potting mix. Don't use potting soil. So I keep saying that, but potting soil retains too much moisture. That's the problem with the potting soils. So.
Okay. Great.
Good luck with that. I think that'll probably be our last call. If we try to squeeze somebody in, it'll be one of those things where I'll be very anxious. So, again, going back to some of the things that you need to be thinking about in your yard, falling leaves. I live right across the street from Christie Park. There was one day, I guess it was on Wednesday, when it was so windy. I thought, oh, here comes the march of the leaves, because they started marching uphill right into the yard. But what I'm doing right now, I have raked some, but I'm still just at the point where I am just running the mower over any leaves that blow up onto our yard. We've set up higher than the park, so we've got a slope that goes down to the sidewalk, and that's where they start banking up right at that point. You do not want leaves to build up in your yard on top of anything unexpected, and especially not lawn. That's not really good at all. So either mow them, rake them, or just get rid of them. And whether it's zoysia, you know, going dormant or anything else, you don't want a whole bunch of stuff piled up on it. And I'm going to emphasize this again. Keep watering. Because we don't have any idea what the winter's going to be like. And what happens is there could be trouble with there's a lot of air pockets in the soil and problematic. Another thing, too, is, you know, putting seed out. Seed may germinate, but its ability to get the root system into the ground deep enough and far enough so it doesn't pop up out of the ground during our freeze-thaw cycle. So putting grass seed out this late is going to be very much an iffy circumstance. So the best thing to do is just, you know, I don't know how the fall color is going to be, but enjoy it. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. See you next week.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B minus or a C plus life, because when you're living a B or B plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.